not in a sense to some realization things, I suppose, bring my hands in my pocket, find the little keys out. And when I looked down, I realized it wasn't a pocket, but also was in the trousers. These trousers I seem to be wearing some sort of diaphanous something or the other. I don't know what it was, it looked like material. It seems like I was in a blue cloud or something. I said, oh my God, what's this? And I said, well, what do I do? What's happening? I could see like, I could see myself being taken in from indecent exposure or something. And yet I realized that I couldn't be, because that body of mine was in that car thing, that tambourine thing, and yet I just didn't make it a tail. I was so confused, and the next thing I knew was, as if for a fleeting second I must have lost consciousness, I found myself in my bedroom. I thought, well, it's funny, I don't remember getting through the door, because I've got no key to open it. And I thought, well, at least there's a chance now to get a suit. But something on there was so that was so good. And I mentioned what I would be my wardrobe, and I put my hand out to take hold of the knob of the thing. And every time I put my hand, I couldn't feel it. Was there any more solid? I thought, well, what is all this about? I was so perturbed, and I thought I'd sit down and I went to sit on what was bed. I was in bed, and I thought, when I thought that I was sitting, and yet I wasn't sitting on anything solid. I was almost peculiar sensation. I felt as if anything around me which could still be real wasn't real anymore. And I felt myself, yes, I felt soft enough, but nothing else in the room. I went round the room trying to touch things, magic shelf, clock, and all various things. Nothing seems obvious anymore. And what I thought I should make up out of this, I just couldn't appreciate that fully. I'd actually died. And yet I'd seen what was me being put into this ambulance with. I thought, I didn't know this was all so stupid. And I thought, well, I must be dreaming. This isn't possible that I'm dead, because if I were dead, I wouldn't be conscious of all this. I would, if I was in the same conscious state being dead, I'd be conscious only obviously of things of another world, not this. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite know what to do. And I sat down in my chair, which was beside the bed. That didn't seem solid yet. I must have had some realization of solidity, because I sat in the sitting position and I put my hands out beside the chair. And it didn't seem, to my touch, didn't seem solid, even I was sitting, even I wasn't sitting. And I thought, this is a strange thing, what can I do next? Then I thought to myself, well, I wonder if anybody, if I'm dead, that is, if I'm dead, which I don't think I am, I must be in some sort of dream which I've made up, my bed is, this is what if I lie on the bed, sitting in this chair, why I should be there, I don't know. And I suppose I sort of thought of something else sort of way, by lying on the bed, I'd come out of my dream, and I'd then be back to normal. So I got up on the bed, and I wouldn't sound stupid, because then I lie on the bed, I'm conscious of lying on the bed, and I start seeing the foot in the bed, and yet I feel, and then wake up, and then I'm being supported in some strange way. To a big amount of feel of lightness all the time. I thought, well, this is the lightness of my head. And then I thought to myself, how can it be lightness in my head? And the head's on my body, and that thing going off to what bumps is the hospital. And I thought, this is all so stupid, this is just a silly dream. And I thought, well, best to close my eyes and just sort of think nothing. And I thought, well, that would probably be of some help. I would lose consciousness. And I closed my eyes and I thought, if I tried to think of nothing, the only time I think of nothing, it seems of all time I think of something. Mm-hmm. And it's my mother suddenly came into my thoughts, so to speak. But it wasn't my mother, as I last remember her, but she's a billion lady, but she passed over, she was voting for 8, she was voting for 90. And as soon as she, my mother, in my mind's eye, as a little baby, I could see her, like, seen her so often in photographs in an album that we had. This is, I remember her sitting in a chair, looking very smart and very elegant, with a very large hat with an enormous feather, which was as child fascinating as an enormous feather curled up his head. But he was standing at her feet, in a little suit with a big yellow straw hat, and he said, so that we can end this photograph. I suppose then I would have been about 5 or 6. And I said, I remember my mother, that this is how she was as a younger, much younger woman. Not as I last remember her. And in that thinking, it was as if I'd seen my mother in this photograph. There she was, standing between this bed, looking radiant. And I thought to myself, this is also so extraordinary. Why should I have seen mother? There she was at that time, her life, when she was a young, vital woman. And of course, as I saw her, she was dressed exactly identical in the English remembrance that I had in that photograph. And somehow, it was as if I could hear her voice speaking to me. And I could hear her say, no, don't worry, I'm here. I'm sorry I'm late. And I thought to myself, it was Mr. Keeler's advice, listening and talking to myself. I say to myself, what is that? What does she mean about being late? And what's she doing there, standing looking like that? Because that was years of this, that photograph come alive. And I was thinking, well, I must be going to a very weird dream. And I could hear her saying, quite distinctly, very strong, clear, firm voice, don't worry, dear. I'm sorry I'm late. It's perfectly all right. And I could hear myself saying in reply, what am I doing here? And what are you doing there? What's all this about? I must be dreaming. And then I heard her say, you're not dreaming, dear. You're not dreaming. You're here with me. I said, what do you mean I'm here with you? I'm here on my own room, lying on my own bed. And you know, mother, you've been dead many years now. She said, but my dear, that's exactly what's happened to you. You're dead. Now you're with me. And I said, I remember hearing myself say, but then if I'm dead, then why am I here in my room? And what are you doing there all dressed up like that? As you were many years ago in that photograph. She said, oh, well, I did that. For various reasons. One, because I thought it would take your roots. And also yours was very fond of my bed, that hat, particularly. You remember how you used to go back there later years, and you used to say to me, oh, you did eat and tell up in those days, you don't seem to bother now, because tell you, mother got to the point where she never bothered very much about dress, and she used to rather mourn it, because she'd always been a very smart woman up to the last few years of her life. And it was a big joke between us, and I used to make mother dress up a bit, and I used to often do her hair for her in the last few months and years of her life. And she's glad she would die this, and she used to be such a fussy woman in the earlier years. And she thinks she remembered, dear, how you used to do my hair, and how you used to do things for me, you used to fuss at me, how you used to help make me keep up for the mark, as you said. So I thought I'd better come, but it's not to fetch you. And I'm sorry I'm late. I knew that you were soon coming, because I sensed and felt it for some 3 days. Because though you don't know it, she says, you had a stroke, you know. You had a heart attack, and your heart's been there for some time. I said, mother, don't be stupid. I said, oh, my heart has been totally all right. I've never had any signs of heart trouble. She said, my dear boy, she said, you know you've had heart trouble for at least 12 months, and we've been with you constantly. And I knew that sooner or later that you would be coming any time, any day. But she said, you know, I couldn't be here earlier today, and I didn't get the realization of morning quickly enough, but I came as soon as I could. But what seems perhaps a long time for you was only a few seconds, not very long since your body was taken away from mortuary. I said, mortuary? What are you talking about mortuary for? I said, here I am, totally all right. I said, but I would like to have some piece of clothes. I said, I can't have my wardrobe. She said, you don't want to buy a bathroom wardrobe. You don't want to start thinking about that. If you want to wear a suit, then we have to go speak. Think hard about yourself, she said. You look like a brilliant suit. I said, Mother, how can you dress yourself just by torches? And it's exactly what people do, though. But they don't always go deeply nothing to dramatize it. Of course you can wear a suit, you can wear what you want to, but a Japanese kimono, if you want to, which reminds me, Mother, I said, she looked like kimono and you used to wear them. And then she said, oh, that. She said, I've got a much better one now. It was the one that I was a torture, the one she had. I brought back many, many years ago on one of my trips when I went to Japan. She was so fond of it because she wore it out and she still clung to it, even the end. But anyway, she was laughing and joking away and it all seemed so natural. She said, come on, she said, get off that big thing. She says, baseball. I said, I'm not a boy. And I said, I'm a man who was 70 yet. She said, you're not a man who was 70, you're only 20. You look at yourself. I said, what do you mean, look at myself? She said, tell me my English, she says. And that you'll see yourself as you are, and you'll feel as you really are, not as you think you were. I said, Mother, you confuse me. I said, you tell me, you said, told me I just died. But I feel first in your eyes, thinking that I can't visualize myself as being dead, and it seems so odd. And at the same time, so natural. She didn't push as natural, so because she didn't understand it. She said, you're not old anymore, and you are dead. Now come with me. She said, come along, come with me. And she was as hard as a child, because she was sent under these circumstances. She said, was such a hold of her hand, she asked me so. And the next thing I remember was that she says, I think I was floating, floating is the only word I can use, through the ceiling, houses in the air, high above the chimney tops, you see, where they're going. It was most curious in the station, I could like to see the pan. I know this must sound terribly stupid, but I said to her, as I seem to be floating through the air, I've seen this extraordinary sensation, because I was conscious of Mother at this moment, but I couldn't see her. And it was as if I was probably, because my mind was so confused at the same time, I was so fascinated, looking down underneath the hill on the chimney tops, and me going through the air like this. And for some reason, all I could think about was Peter Pan. Mother was wounded. I know this sounds so stupid, but I said to myself, this can't be true. This is one of those stupid dreams of my best care. Whatever all this is about, it's not what Mother says. It's just a stupid dream, and I should wake up. Anyway, I was flashing away, and it wasn't so far, in as much as I could see underneath me everything. And the winding boat, and then gradually seemed to come to the open sea. I thought, this is ridiculous. If I were dead, and this very one, my mother, I'd be going up to him. I wouldn't be floating over the earth like this. I wouldn't be interested. Anyway, we seemed as if we were floating or moving in the air for a very long time. It seems if we were going over France, and I could see that we were going over the chapel, and I could see the lights and the harbour, and I could see all so much that I associated with years previously, on a few other occasions that I had been in an airplane. So it all seemed most weird and most wonderful. And then I thought to myself, this is unbelievable. No one would believe this. And I wake up and tell my friend all this, they say, oh, this is stupid, this is not possible, and it's just a stupid dream. Anyway, I must have risen higher in the atmosphere or something, because it all became invisible. I just couldn't see anything anymore. It's as if I was floating in clouds, and there was illumination, there was brightness, intense brightness, which I took to be the sun. But I soon found it wasn't. And I was floating from this billowy cloud, and seemed for ages and ages and ages. And then all of a sudden, on the horizon, or what I suppose one would call the horizon, I was seen intense, golden glow. And it seems as if I was going further and further and further into this glow. It seemed to be permeating over my surrounding room. And then I became more conscious of this, so it began gradually to take some shape in my surroundings. And it was as if I was entering, well, I suppose, let me say, it was the vast landscape of fever for the here and there dotted about little houses. Things seem to have golden glow, seem to be no other color at all but this golden, golden glow, if you have. But I still thinking about this in the space, so no conscious of it just remained in the back of me. And I began to wonder what all this was. And gradually it seemed as if we were descending or going down. And as I went lower and lower and lower, the golden glow seemed to lose itself. And where there were hedges and trees and houses and so on, gradually began to be sufficient colour. The ground seemed to be where it was obviously to my appearance. Grass took on a beautiful green shade. The trees seemed to be green and brown and russet for various shades. And the houses began to take more different shapes, like ceiling walls were white, and the doors and the window frames looked colourful and painted, various colours presumably according to the individuals who lived there. And then gradually we seemed to come down or to sink into what was a very pretty house in a sitting in the gardens, in this way to describe it. And there were flowers everywhere, profusion of flowers, all colours, all different types. There were daffodils, there were tulips, and there were narcissi, and all the flowers I remember that my mother and I were so fond of, which we were both great gardens in other years. Mother was always back in the garden until she was 2 years to go. And then I would see this pretty little house with its lattice windows and its pretty little door, which was around this door. There was what we, I only remember now, the very like house we had in my young days when we were together, the whole family in the countryside. It was a house which my mother was particularly fond of, in which she brought all the children up, in which my father and all of us spent possibly, I think, the happiest days of our life. It was almost, you might say, a spectacle in this house, and it just came from me, and I began myself saying, oh, mother, this is so like the house you used to have in Norfolk. She said, yes, dear, it is the house you used to have in Norfolk. I said, don't you see, but how can it be the house if we came to that house on earth, if it's still in existence? It can't be. She said, but yes, it is that house. The house here on earth was the earthly house of our earlier years, but this is what we have created by the love that we had for the house and the happiness that we had in it and the family life that we shared there. This is it. This is the reality of it. Anyway, we went in there with my father, sitting, as I always remember him, sitting in the evening in a chair, a red chair, which was so fond of, a big velvety chair. I didn't think it actually was velvet, but it was something which looked rather like velvet. He studied the chair with very heavy legs. And that was a very impressive chair. It was almost his chair. And we children never sat in it. I think once or twice I sat in it, but he wasn't around. He was always fast. It was almost as much as I was sat. There he was. But he looked so young and so virile, so as I remember him as a young man. And there he was sitting, honestly waiting. And I thought myself, this is just too fantastic. It's like if I'd gone back 40 years or more to my youth. And in the window there was a pot of flowers, and I was so loud, and my mamma, she used to brush the leaves down, and the things I think it was. Mm. And she used to dump these potted flowers. But the only thing that I didn't like, the mamma always had them in the window, she was always so fond of me, as exactly as that. On the big circular table there was this heavy, shiny old clock thing about a head with bubbles on, and those children, how we used to look forward to the meals, and how we used to lay that table and put the cloth back afterwards, and the potted plant would go in the stick. I remember the table so well with this big carved legs like lions, claws, lions, feet. I knew this all so well. It was written of it all, it was so real, so beautiful, and yet There was something about it that had a glow. I could mean, begin to describe it. Anyway, my father gave me a great welcome, put his arm around me and said, "Well, chef, you've done it, you've done it." I thought to myself, "He has done what?" And I still couldn't get the sightings in my head that I was dead. He said, come, come sit down, let's talk about things. So as he talked about what we talk about, it's wonderful to see you and mother. But why didn't you come? And mother came, went to, he said, I wanted to stay here and be here to welcome you when you arrived. I knew mother would be all right. Besides, mother wasn't at home, you know. I said, what do you mean mother wasn't at home? Mother was the only one who came. He said, "My dear boy," he said, "don't be so stupid. You may not have seen them, but there were dozens of people there." I said, "You mean dozens of people?" "I am sure, mother," he said, "you may not have seen the others because at the moment you are not in a position to see. You can only see that which you yourself make possible. But there are lots of other people there, wonderful people which you'll get to know, and we should introduce you to, that will be able to tell you much more even than the knife you take us. But not very necessary. It's good to be at home and be comfortable and be happy and relax and not worry about all this nonsense they call death." I said, "But you know, you keep saying this business that I'm dead, but I'm not dead." He said, "Of course you're not dead, really, but the world keeps you dead. And since they don't understand anything else, there's not very much you can do about it." I said, don't you realize that there's something very different about you?" He said, "No, come look in here." So I went with him and looked at what appeared to be a full-length mirror. Looking back, I remember that mirror so well. It almost stood just in the top of the staircase, which I always thought as a child was a stupid place to have a mirror. But because it was almost as if you went and walked in and bumped into yourself. But for some reason or other, that mirror was always in the top of the staircase. And I realized that it was very nice in the letters, but at the time, I remember I just thought to stand there just preen herself before she went downstairs and walked in the guests and they were riding into a party or something. Anyway, I looked at myself in the snow, and there I was, as I remember myself, thinking it would stay, looking so young, and my hair was parted, and I remember seeing the cliff that I had that used to, no matter how much I used to brush my hair, it almost fell down just over my eye. And there I was in a suit that I remember so well, the steam stripes, dark grey suit, and high collar. Oh, I remember myself so well in those days, and there I was dressed very much the same. And I thought to myself, what if I did? And why am I looking like I did in English days? It must be so odd. Why should I say, look, I look, why not? Look, as I did in George V's time, or even for that matter, as a little child in Victoria's time. All seems so weird, so mixed up. Pharisees don't tell quite about that. So all you've got to think about is that you are you. And you're very much alive, and you've got no aches, no pain. I said, "Look, Father, I know that the pain of any conscience in my life, but he knows that I've been dying, he's dying heart trouble, and so on and so on." He said, "You were lucky." He said, "You must be grateful that you didn't have aches and pains and sickness and all the rest of it. You were lucky that you came here today." He said, "It's just like you, of course, got down and dead asleep. Because there you are, you can't help it. At the same time, you should be grateful." And then they went on in laughing, chatting away, and I began to feel the backs, I suppose, the first time. I began to accept it. I thought, well, I really have to accept this, and I'm dead. But why is it so much fascinating about death? I remember myself when I used to go to chapel in the old days. Mother was a great chapel girl. We used to sing the hymns, and I used to find it all very entertaining as a boy. And later, as I got older, I began to think, well, it's a way of life, one expects you, but I don't really believe it. I read one or two books in the time, I read one or two things about books and terms of churches, and I think then I began to go, yeah, I've heard something about this business before. To spiritualism and all that nonsense. That won't take me too seriously. And my father said, he said, "You're on the right track now, boy. We used to defy that man and me and all of us. We used to say it was among the devil. Thank goodness, man, what a difference it would make if people knew and understood about that. You wouldn't be the little bit of human being, and his mother and I and others were. But we know what had happened. We understand more sincerely and deeply about these things. Especially as if we don't know these things under the earth, which is, I think, good pity. Because I think if we knew these things and understood them, it'd make such a vast difference to our lives when we're there. And also, if any difference in the past makes in the world that we are, which is no joke, but the world is taking a being and still have what I use, everything was basically done in a nice way, you know. But anyway, it's going to sit down in front of the fire. I said, fire, I'm raised the fire. I said, what do you want the fire here for? If you're supposed to be a Jew, he said, we're not a Jew at all. He said, well, we're in a condition of fire, we're a flame of fire. Well, anything that's in the field of very natural to us, it is a form of human hands, if you like. But my idea of him has always been this little house, my own little garden, my own little world life. And that's what we've got here. Fancy, Papa, you've been dead, if you are dead, for about 25, 30 years, you know. He said, yes, that's Papa, he says. Do you think of time? Well, it's 20, 25 years in time, it's still my head. It wasn't very much when you think about it. So he said, people seem to think that in 25 years, that you should know all the ends and the outs and know everything. He said, I'm content to be a man. And eventually, I suppose, I should progress into a higher state of being, but distance me, and along with the family are together again, then perhaps we'll begin to make some changes. But I want you to both of you, and Mother wants to both of you back into the old home, so that when you came, you feel at home. You really feel that there was something to come to, something that you made was something that was full of love, something which was so important to all of us. And here we are. Back again as a family, and let's enjoy ourselves and be happy. And later on we'll think about other things. And that's how I came over. And of course, there's a lot more I could tell you, but I can't tell you now. But perhaps for some later days I can. How I then begin to become a talk on.
It's been interesting, Mr. Morgan. Thank you. What are you doing now, young son?
I'm talking about what happened some while back. But what I'm doing now, I'm teaching youngsters. I'm a school teacher. And there's another very funny thing, you know. I always, as a young man, was very keen on school. And it was my ambition to be a school teacher. And I always thought to myself, oh, if I had an opportunity, you know, I'd like to be a school teacher. But of course, my own father, they were very good, you know, they lived well. But they finally put me to engineering. And it was his ambition, I think, as a boy, to be an engineer himself. And he didn't come off. And I suppose he thought, you see, it's happening to me. Anyway, I suppose in my own way, I was quite a good engineer. I wasn't famous or anything like that. But I was good at the job. But in my heart, I always wanted to be a teacher. And now I'm here, I am a teacher. And I have a wonderful little class, the youngsters who have come over the last few years, who I've been able to teach and help. These things really matter. Not a lot of the nonsense of the book you taught, this is no good value. You taught so much that is unimportant on earth. But here you can teach the things of no good value. Anyway, I must go. I'm very happy, and I'm very happy to spend with you, but I wasn't going to tell you.
Oh, I'm glad you have.
Yeah. May I extend best wishes to Mr. George?
Oh, yeah.
Blessings to you both. I love so much about you and Dr. Marshall and other things. Goodbye, my dear.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much. Bye.